All right. And I am going to welcome Dave in to come on in and share with us. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you, Christina. My name's Dave. I'm an addict, and Rushil, it's great to hear you have 9 days today. That is absolutely amazing. And from the first days you came in, and you kept on saying you couldn't put one day together, and just to hear that is so exciting and refreshing and invigorating for me. You know, when I think about what it's like getting here and trying to figure out what the heck's going on and how I'm going to stop using drugs. It's what I don't do. I don't know how not to use drugs when I get to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. So I'm so proud of you and just really, really happy that you continue to come back and participate in your recovery, and I get so much out of that. Thank you. I've never I think I've only once shared from a secular perspective per se. I've shared a lot at traditional meetings, and normally I just I share my experience, strength, and hope, and I don't. Sometimes I bring up the fact that I'm an atheist. A lot of the time I do, actually, or at least I say something about it, because I feel that it's really important for those in traditional meetings who are struggling with whether or not they're going to stay in Narcotics Anonymous when they don't have a true feeling of what, you know, what this higher power or what this idea of this spiritual slash religious slash deitous higher power is all about, before they check out and decide not to come back to Narcotics Anonymous. So I would much rather say something that could possibly upset some traditionalists in Narcotics Anonymous than to not say it to the person who's about to go to their very last meeting. And I think that's really, really been important for me, is to speak my truth as often as possible and as clearly as possible, so everybody has an opportunity to get clean in Narcotics Anonymous, as it says in the third tradition. And very clearly, it's the only tradition that says the word only in it. The only requirement. So it's really important to recognize that and to be a part of that. But I'm going to tell a little bit about how I got to Narcotics Anonymous through my experience growing up in a family that was not religious. I think that I had a little bit of a head start, maybe even an opportunity to start off in a much better place than somebody who has had struggles with religion or struggles with spirituality growing up or before they get to Narcotics Anonymous. But you know, my family, I was born into a family that practiced the commercialization of God and religion, such as, you know, holidays and gifts and parties and things like that, but always grew up with the perception that intangible things such as spirituality, faith, and hope, those things that we talk about in the first three steps, a lot of the times weren't real. If I couldn't smell it, touch it, feel it, taste it, or see it, it didn't exist. You know, my first God was the God of analysis, the God of intellect more than anything. And my mom was a school professor, or you know, a college professor, and so there was a lot of intellect flying around my house. My dad died when I was young, and when that happened, everything kind of fell apart. You know, he was an atheist. We were going to this place called the Ethical Society, which is a group of people with little or no connection to religion or spirituality, gathered to focus on moral and ethical issues and provide a platform for children to learn and thrive in a positive, loving environment. But when my dad died, it sent my family into a tailspin. You know, my mom did everything in her power to be both mom and dad as well, deal with the incredible grief that she was having over my dad's death. And I was just rebellious. I was 8 years old, and I had no idea what was going on. I didn't believe that my dad was gone because I hadn't seen him for several weeks before he died. And I started falling into that feelings of active addiction, and all of the things that we talk about addiction being kind of came to fruition at that point. I became focused on sports and comic books and fantasy type stuff, and TV became a big thing for me, and I just became focused on anything that would get me out of the feelings that I had going on deep inside. And I just before coming to Narcotics Anonymous, I just forgot everything that I learned from when I was in that ethical society group, and I learned a lot from that. And I'm really grateful for that period that I had when I was young, and that I learned a lot from that. But I became so self-absorbed and arrogant that I didn't think that I would be able to learn anything from a bunch of addicts, from a bunch of users. And when I first got to Narcotics Anonymous, I loitered around the rooms. I came in here and I heard a lot of people talking about God and a higher power, and some people were talking about different specific gods and those kind of things, and it just didn't affect me, and I was really, really grateful of that. And after about 90 days of just being completely out of control, I was diagnosed pretty early on, about 17, as bipolar, and every time I would go into a mania, life was great, everything was perfect. And then I would go into a depression, and life would be awful, and I would just be wanting to cry out for help but unable to, and just be stuck. So those first 90 days, when the mania was really in full force, I was just bouncing off the walls everywhere I was. A good day was like this. I would go into a meeting, and I was doing 3 to 4 meetings a day, because back at that time there weren't, obviously in 1989, there weren't any Zoom meetings going on, but we had meetings at 10 p.m. and midnight, and there were some 6 a.m. meetings and 8 a.m. meetings, all different times. I would go all the time because that's all I had to do, was go try to participate and try to fit in. But I would go to meetings, and on a really good day, I could sit still for about 30 seconds, and that was a really calm day for me. And I would jump up, the meeting would be going on, and I'd walk over to a window, which was open, because back in 1989, almost all the meetings in Sacramento, where I got clean, were either they had a smoking section or a secondhand smoking section, right? So I'd walk outside, and I'd walk up to a window, and I'd be leaning up against the window, and I'd look down, and I'd have two cigarettes burning. I don't know how that happened, but somebody would be talking about something really serious. Like, we'd talk about the spiritual principles of love and compassion, and they'd be talking about somebody in their family or a close friend being sick or dying or losing a job or whatever, whatever was irking them or they were having a problem with. And I had, at that point, I didn't really know compassion. I didn't know what empathy was in reality. And everything that I heard people say, my mind twisted into something weird or strange or funny. And I don't know if you guys can relate to that at all whatsoever, but you see, you guys might be thinking that right now, but unfortunately, I didn't have an editor right here, and everything would come flying out of my mouth as quickly as I thought it. Well, not quite as quickly as I thought it, but it came out pretty quick. And half the room would be laughing, and the other half would be getting the rope ready to hang. Not really. But that first 90 days, more than anything, the one thing that I remember that kept me coming back is nobody ever told me that I wasn't welcome in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, even when I was completely out of control and insane. And people would pull me out of the meeting and walk me down away from the meeting so I wouldn't disturb the meeting, and let me rant and rave or whatever I was doing, and then pull me back when I was calm enough to finish the meeting. And that's what I had been looking for my whole life, ever since my dad had died. Was somebody just to care about me, just somebody who just wanted to participate in what I was doing. And the what happened was that the first time that I asked somebody to walk me through the steps, I had just gone to a doctor. I did some outside help back in 89. They did not have wonderful literature that we have today. The information pamphlets on medication and Narcotics Anonymous, mental health and the NA member in times of illness, all this wonderful stuff that's already written out and easy for us to grab. The stuff was in the reading in the literature, but it was hard to find. It wasn't just available the way it is now. But there were enough people who had been around for a long enough time to understand the traditions and recognize that there was nobody here who was a professional in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. That even if we are a psychiatrist or a social worker or a lawyer or a doctor or whatever, we're not that in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. We're just all equals. And I saw a lot of people trying to be those gurus and those professionals and those people who were telling people how they had to act when they're in the rooms. And it was, I was watching people leave in droves. They said, "I can't handle this. I don't want people telling me what to do or how to act. I didn't come here for that. I came here because we're supposed to be equal in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous." So the guy who I actually asked to sponsor me, he was a just a n nobody that you would have thought that I would have chosen. He was a guy who was a third generation general assistance recipient. He was on all kinds of aid, and I came from a family of a college professor and a business owner, so finances were never a problem for my family. But he had everything that I wanted. He had all those things that we're talking about, that we talk about, those spiritual principles that we learn early on: the honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, compassion, love, listening skills, all these things that I just didn't understand. I knew the definitions of, but I really deep down inside didn't understand. And he helped me to come to terms with that once I started using any substance, that my life had become unmanageable. And when we worked through that first step and I recognized that, I realized that there was something that I could work on. For the first time, I was aware that there was something that I could work on to help change my life. And it gave me the strength to believe that I could change my life and become an upstanding member of society if I was willing to take that deep dive into what I had done in the past and how it affected those in my life and myself, and affecting myself. And since I didn't have a clear connection with the higher power or any spiritual entity, he encouraged me to be true to myself and work within my belief system to complete the third step. And that was the big one for me. And for a lot of us, that's really where we end up getting, a lot of us end up getting stuck. But for me, I was really grateful that I had somebody who understood the fact that some people just see things differently. So my journey with the third step allowed me to accept that I definitely had some major personality flaws or issues. If I wanted to make any changes for the better, I needed to develop parameters for tracking my progress. Some people would say that's this whole higher power thing, so I can look to the higher power or whatever like that to track, what I'm doing in my life. But the more that I learned about the principles we practice throughout the work, throughout my work, through the steps, I realized that my higher power is tied to my efforts to becoming better aligned with these principles. And what I do is I use the word higher self, the term higher self, meaning that I have a clear understanding of who I want to be, the principles that I really want to live by and practice on a daily basis, and the personality issues that cause me damage in my relationships to myself and to everybody around me. The humbling part of seeing my higher self as my higher power is that I'm unable to reach such a goal. I'm never going to become that higher self. All of those spiritual principles worked in a perfect unison is never going to happen. It was the first opportunity for me to recognize that I will always fall back into negative behaviors and undesirable actions, and prove that my place as another human falling way short of perfection. And that is really a cool thing for me. So I finished that third step and I was able to move on to the fourth step. And what that did for me from that point on was allowed me to utilize the phrase higher self in that spot where I was where I saw God, or where I saw the word God or higher power. It didn't affect me the way it could have easily affected me. And my life continued, started to get a lot better. I was able to look at things very practically. What's happening right now? What can I do? I accept that I'm acting a certain way, or that in the fifth step, when I look at the exact nature of my wrongs, am I actually seeing, what that means and what's going on? Why I'm acting the way I'm acting? Why I'm being arrogant? Why I'm being aloof? Why I'm isolating? Usually because I feel less than, I feel inferior, I feel insecure, and those things. And in that sixth and seventh step, where I'm talking about shortcomings or character defects or personality flaws or whatever word I wanted to use to say the things that are keeping me from being the person I've always wanted to be, I was able to make a decision on whether I was going to do some work and take a look at it and continue to grow from that. So, it really set me up to be in a good place for making my amends, for making my list of people, places, and things that I had done damage to over the years, the financial amends that I needed to make, the damage I had done, the things I had stolen from stores, changing price tags in stores to pay what I think the thing is worth, and all those just twisted thoughts that I had going on inside. And then led me up to those maintenance steps, those 10th, 11th, and 12th step. And the 10th step was basically continuing to take a look at myself regularly and not forgetting, not doing it on a daily basis, but catching myself after a couple of days and really not looking at what's going on inside of me and concentrating on the stuff that's outside, that I was able to check and see what was going on deep inside of me at that time, so I could get back on track and start moving towards becoming more the person who I've always wanted to be. And then at 11th step, he uses the word prayer, but I don't pray. But I definitely meditate. I definitely need to slow myself down, because even after 35 years of being around here, my mind still works at 1,000 miles a minute, and I need to slow it down. And how I do that is just by stopping, moving, and finding myself a place to quiet myself and allow the thoughts to go through my head and thank them for sharing and move on and just kind of calm myself down. And that was an important part for me, was to learn how to meditate, how to stop myself from going so fast. And then that 12th step, which really was the thing that solidified my membership in Narcotics Anonymous, was the recognition that all the service that needs to be done around Narcotics Anonymous, all the things that we need to do to stay self-sufficient and self-supporting, and not have people come in to tell us how to run our fellowship and our program, all of that service is something that I wanted to do, not had to do. Because until I worked that 12th step, I always felt like they were trying to get something over on me, that I had to be of service, and then it was just such a drag, or such a chore, that I had to show up and make coffee, or I had to show up and greet people at the meeting, or I had to participate in the camp out committee or whatever. But when I hit that 12th step and I started looking at what was going on around me, I recognized that the times that I was the most serene and the most peaceful was when I was thinking about other people, and when I was working towards helping another human being just be okay for a day. And that's where I came, that's that that was the focal point, and it has been the focal point of my recovery since I've been here. Was not trying to live a life beyond my wildest dreams, not having this incredible, beautiful, everything's perfect life. I'm a Pittsburgh Pirate fan. How could you possibly have a perfect life being a Pittsburgh Pirate fan? Except when they, of course, when they sweep the Phillies, that's always a great thing. But what are you going to do? The reality is that I just had to continue to look at what was going on in my life and recognize what life on life's terms means. Is I don't control what happens outside of my immediate area. I can't control what's happening outside. I can't control what happens to my body as far as disease or infection or any of that stuff. And I just need to figure out how to deal with it when it happens. And my life has taken a lot of strange turns, and I've had a lot of physical and mental and emotional things that have gone on in my life. These steps that I've worked and these spiritual principles or these ethical principles that I've learned from being around here have allowed me to be okay with myself and be able to look at myself in the mirror on a moment by moment basis, continuously, and looking back, knowing that that person who I'm looking at is okay, that my life is okay no matter where I'm at, good, bad, or ugly. So my life continues to grow from that point. That's exactly where it's taken me. And as you know, I love to joke. I love to kid around. I try not to do it at the expense of others, unless they're Philly fans. But other than that, but we have a good time around here too. And that the disease of addiction is deadly, and it needs to be taken very seriously. But I can't take myself so seriously. I have to take myself with a grain of salt, or else I'll go crazy, or I'll end up being so serious that I'll never have any enjoyment in life. So when I have some enjoyment, when I have some fun, I'm going to go see Elvis Costello next week. I'm really excited about that, just being able to do little stuff like that today brings me joy in my life. And I think that's about it. I just really want to say I'm grateful for all of you listening. Rochelle, once again, just I'm so excited about seeing you coming back. We're going to celebrate your 30 days in a couple weeks here. Really, really excited about that. And with that, I'm going to share the time. So thanks a lot.